Hi, thanks for joining us for another MXRS podcast, telling the story behind the stories. Today's guests are Rachel and Tu, the singer and the songwriter who created our wonderful MXRS jingle. They share their mixed roots stories, talk about their process in writing and recording their songs, and for a special treat, they played for us live in Mark's living room. Hope you enjoy it as much as we did.
I'm really glad you guys could come.
Thank you for having us.
We're so excited to be here.
We've been a part of the whole evolution of this, and that's really exciting. But we've got questions. We want to know, first of all, what is your mixed roots story? And that you don't have to identify as mixed to have a mixed roots story.
Me first?
Sure.
Yeah, I don't... That's, thank you for saying that. I'm so excited to be here. Because I don't actually identify as mixed race, you know, and I think that's not the point. Because, like, I am... Both my parents are Vietnamese. I'm full Vietnamese. But I actually do end up feeling like my background is very mixed. And that's such a nice way to say it, because I've always actually described it as, like, conflicted. You know, because, like, I grew up speaking Vietnamese. My parents speak Vietnamese to this day. They don't speak a lick of English, you know. And I went to school, and I remember, like, the first day, like, going to, like, kindergarten or preschool or whatever, and my parents were like, watch the teacher's lips so that you can learn how to speak English. And they, I don't think they were intending this, but, like, it was always about, like, the separation of, like, the language. Like, when you speak Vietnamese, you speak Vietnamese, and my Vietnamese accent's pretty good. And when you speak English, you speak English. And so I've always had this very, like, a separation. I think in Vietnamese, or I think in English. And so how that ended up manifesting for me is that, like, I was like, there's, like, two parts of me, you know? There's a Vietnamese side and, like, an American Western side, and you know, a lot of times those come into conflict. Mm. So I'd say mixed roots is a much nicer way to say it. I guess it suggests that there's, like, a harmony in it and not, like, conflict.
We've been talking about how to kind of rebrand the concept of mixed roots, and how mixed roots doesn't have to mean race, and how you process that and take that and make that, you know, who you are and work for you.
We talk about this all the time because we don't, like, intend for it to be that way, but, like, there's, like, so much, I don't know, but I think that that's just something in our music that's, like, there's a lot of, like, dualities, right, like, that go into it, like, there's past and present and old and new, and I don't know, it's just, like, something that we talk about a lot in many different forms. Like, I don't know, like, I don't want to speak for you, but I think we'll get into it, but, like, how you talk about, Rachel talks about, like, she's actually mixed race, and, like, there's, like, a conflict and, like, a separation between her dad's side of the family and her mom's side of the family. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, well, will you talk more about the language thing, because... So now what do you speak at home, and what were you encouraged to speak, and do you feel like you've lost any of your culture?
Yeah, I speak Vietnamese when I go to my parents' house, and it comes back pretty well. I went to school when I was younger, I went to Vietnamese school every Sunday, so I learned how to read and write, and 3 hours every Sunday. And it was taught as if it was school in Vietnam. So there was a lot of recitation. There was a lot of, like, you know, every time a teacher would come into the classroom, all the children would stand. There were grown adults in there. But the students would stand, and they would greet their teachers, you know. And it was, like, very traditional. You know, so I learned how to read and write, which I think is kind of a phenomenon in the Vietnamese American culture. I think it's losing a lot of steam because it's not like a a tradition of, like, calligraphy or anything. It's, you know, like, Western characters. It's got a lot of tonal things and accents. So, I don't know, like, it. I feel connected to it. I feel like it's, like, because I learned how to do it, it almost feels like a parlor trick. Because I don't find opportunities to connect with it or use it in any... And I'm not... And because of the separation that I'm talking about between, like, my Vietnamese self and my American self, there's, like, a much more expressive, creative part to my, quote-unquote, American self, where I write my songs in English, and I express myself, and I talk, and I can articulate myself in English. But if you were to tell me... If you were to ask me these questions in Vietnamese, I would not be able to tell you... I would not be able to talk about this in Vietnamese. I don't have the words. And sometimes I feel like I don't have the feelings in Vietnamese to express them.
It feels like it's a language and it serves its purpose for communicating with people you want to communicate with, but it may not serve the emotional purposes.
Yes.
Because of some kind of distance.
Yeah, and at the risk of getting, like, super therapy on you, you know, my main way of practicing using my Vietnamese was to speak to my parents. And the relationship with my parents is very traditional in that it's very, like, you know, they're my parents. And there's a submissive quality to it. There isn't really an aspect in my household of, like, you know, when you watch, like, teen sitcoms, be like, I hate you, Mom! I hate you, Dad! I'm my own person! And I never had that because, I mean, I had those feelings, but those were American feelings. I never was able to express that to my parents. And so, yeah, you're right. Like, the language is so, you know, you have the language to be able to say, yes, I hear what you're saying, Mom and Dad. You know, I agree. I submit. I'm going to school. You know, like, it's not so expressive for me.
Rachel, can you please share with us what is your mixed race story?
My mixed race story is something I felt like I had to really think about to notice. It wasn't as apparent as maybe some other people's stories. The first time I grew up in between Cleveland, Ohio, and Sandusky, so right off of Lake Erie in this town called Avon Lake, and it was a very white town. And the first time that I really noticed that I looked different was at the pool, the neighborhood pool. We had, like, two pools in the little development. We would spend a lot of time there. And I was with I happened to be with two other friends of color. And one was adopted from Thailand and one had a white mom and a Lebanese dad. So we were the three kids there and we were swimming. We were probably second or third grade. And this guy came up to us and he said, like, excuse me, are you our foreign exchange students for this year? and we're like, no, we rode our bikes here, you know, we live here. we thought that was really funny, but, like, just thinking about, in preparation for this interview, what my mixed story was. That was one of the first times that it was really like, oh, you know, my I look different. I don't look like I'm from here. I was thinking that it, my being mixed manifested more as, like, physical annoyances more than, like, that was how it showed the most, like bushy, unruly, like, unibrow situation, or, like, dark hair on my arms, or, like, big curly hair. And all my friends had fair skin and, you know, light coloring. And I always, I always wished for that. I always wished to have like a little blonde ponytail with a bow, you know, and I didn't have that. So that was really how it looked to me. It was more of a physical appearance. But I didn't grow up speaking Spanish at home at all. My dad speaks Spanish, but we didn't speak Spanish at all. I took it a couple times in school when it was offered, but it never stuck. And I feel like that is the thing that has separated me a lot from feeling like I had a mixed experience, because my home looked the same as at school.
Where's your
dad from? So my dad, his mom is from Mexico, and she came to the United States when she was a teenager, and his dad's from Arizona. But also Mexican. Yeah. And so on his side, if we were to go to a family function, they would sometimes slip into speaking Spanish, because it was the language that was easier for them. And that always made me feel really left out. People always, people are always start speaking to me in Spanish in public, like at a store. People will spurt, and I'll say, I'm sorry. And they always, usually the response is anger. Like, they usually get really mad at me and like do a shameful, slow head shake. Like, oh, okay. You know, and they, they just they're really mad that I don't speak Spanish and that I should. And I've heard that. Why don't you speak Spanish? You should speak Spanish. Like, nothing. You should try. Like, people get really mad at me that I don't speak Spanish. So that's kind of the main thing that makes me feel, mixed is that little conflict.
This is Mark Edwards, and I was gonna. So, what is the story? Because you sing together, you're the singer and the songwriter. So, how'd you come to be? This is fascinating. I mean, one, I really love name the singer and the songwriter. I don't know. It seems very clear, but there's a lot there. It seems like there'll be a lot of layers. So I'm just curious.
Thanks.
I'd love to hear your story.
This is actually our second band name. We were called Ampersand before, all spelled out. And we got to a point before we were going to release this that there were so many other ampersands. There's a clothing line. There's tons of bands. There's everything. So it was going to be really hard to streamline the marketing if that was our name. So this was the name we came up with, but it took months and months to try to come up with this.
We wanted something, you know, like, well, I think to kind of answer the we were hoping that the name came off, you know, as something more timeless and straightforward, because, and something that kind of reflected our process, because, you know, our role, you know, Rachel sings, and there's a song on here that she writes the lyrics for, but like, we wanted to really give people a sense of how we work and bring the process into the name and our identity, because it's interesting how we work, I think. And we originally met in San Francisco, mm-hmm. in theater school.
Yeah, we both went to theater school. We were setting out to be actors, and we moved to LA to act as well.
How long have you guys been in LA?
Since 2008, the fall of 2008. We bought concert tickets. While we still lived in San Francisco, we bought concert tickets for a show in Los Angeles, so we would be forced to go.
That was our commitment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when we were in... I remember being in San Francisco in my senior year in college, and we had met Rachel at transfer to San Francisco State, and my last year there, I was working on a musical. Like, I was, you know, we were, I've always played guitar since I was in high school, but I was self-taught, and it was more of a passion and a hobby, and I was like, I'm going to be an actor, that's my thing, and I was taking a musical theater class where I was writing a musical, so I was always in these piano practice rooms in the music department. And Rachel was pursuing me.
So it's pursuing whatever. When it works out.
Yep.
So yeah.
Yep.
So she would always find me. I remember. Yeah, she
I would always just like happen to walk by the practice room.
And yet, I always remember, and she would just come in, and we would sit on this piano bench in front of this upright piano and talk, and I'd be like, oh, look at this thing I came up with, and I was, you know, sharing all this stuff with her, and she actually, you know, and she, like we talked about music, and I was always like, and she was in this musical theater class with me, and I was like, oh, you know, she has a very nice voice, but she shared with me that she was, like, afraid to sing. Wow. So, like, she wouldn't sing in front of me. Like, I'd be like, come on, just sing this thing. And she'd be like, no. So.
In front of anybody.
You wouldn't. No. So you weren't doing musical theater. You were doing.
No, I was doing musical theater alone in my house. Yeah.
Like, you were trying to take this class to, like, get over your fear of singing, right? To, like, sing more in public.
Uh-huh. But it didn't. That class didn't work for that, I guess.
So my strategy was, like, I really want to hear Rachel sing. So I would learn, we would talk about it, and she'd be like, oh, I love this song by Fiona Apple, or she would, like, drop these songs, she's like, I really like this song. So I would just go and learn them on the guitar or whatever, and then I'd just start to play them and not look at Rachel. Just like, oh, I'm just noodling around. And then she'd slowly kind of, like, kind of hum along, and then eventually we got into kind of a more of, like, a rhythm of, like, playing just cover songs. We just played other people's songs that Rachel liked. Because before we met, you know, I was playing, you know, I was, like, really just, I was that guy in college,
like,
with my guitar.
Like a fedora.
I loved that guy.
I had a fedora. Thanks for bringing up the fedora. That's okay.
At least it's radio and no one can see it.
Yeah. I'm not wearing, for the record, I am not wearing a fedora right now.
Can we just clear
the air here? But yeah, I was trying to be the sensitive singer-songwriter guy. I was playing open mics and stuff. It was so lame. But, you know, I was playing, like, really, you know, like, folk rock and, like, you know, stuff that I was, like, listening to and the songs that I wrote songs. I learned how to play the guitar because I wanted to write music. But every time we would try to get together and I was like, oh, maybe we should play an original song. And, like, I would try to write something and Rachel, like, was like, it just doesn't sound right. Like, it doesn't sound right in my voice, and it doesn't sound very good, or whatever. Like, it's, and so it took a long time before we were able to actually, like, merge. And I was just so determined. I was like, okay. I would go back, I'd be like, okay, that's fine. Then I'd go back, and I'd write a song, and I'm like, okay, I really want to write a song that is good enough that Rachel would want to sing. And it took, I mean, it took a long time. It took a long time to try to figure that out.
Do you guys remember what was there, like, a specific moment where you both said, yes, this is
I guess did you write We'll Get By first or PCH first?
We'll Get By, yeah. We wrote
Which isn't on our record. It's a deep cut.
I think
track.
You have to play it right now.
That's all weird. It's too deep. Okay. It was just a little bit of a different song. We took a road trip in 2009. Up the coast on the Pacific Coast Highway up to the Oregon sand dunes, and then we circled back to Ashland to go to the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. Mm-hmm. And it was, like, a really special road trip for us. And I think we listened to a lot of music. There's, like, a lot of musicality in that. And I think, Fanshan, you were talking about how it's, like, you know, you've been listening to it on your commute. And I think that there's a sense of travel in this album.
Absolutely.
That I think comes through because I think a lot of the music came from us being in the car together. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how it came about.
What point did you say this?
There wasn't like a clear, like a line, like a one, we sat down and talked about it. There wasn't that. We just kept getting really clear, positive energy towards the singing. Everyone who would hear us play, or like we sent like a recording of covers to my mom, and people would get really excited and they would, you know what this sounds like, and they would try to name other bands that we sound like. That's a fun game people like to play with us. and you know what you should cover? And they would give us names of covers that they wanted us to do. People come and talk to us. This our favorite thing that happens is people free associate, and they come up to us and they say, this song reminded me of my grandma, and we would cook in the summer, and this like pie that she would make, and it's this bizarre sort of like really personal memory that they come up with, and it's amazing. And that wouldn't happen when we were acting. People would it was very good, and they clap, and then it's, and then it's over. Yeah,
right.
And so the pursuit of acting always felt really solitary, and like you're just climbing alone up this mountain. And there's like, you know, you can find a community of actors to lift you up. That's hard to find, but you can. That does exist. But it felt like with music, there was like a really direct in with the audience. So maybe that's why we like leaned into this more.
But as you leaned in, at what point did you finally say yes and you got on stage together?
We played, the first time we played was at a friend's like benefit for his theater show. We were always like kind of really close to the theater, kind of keeping a toe in still. And we played a couple covers, and it was horrifying. And we like got in a fight before we sang, because like I don't sing in front of people, and we had never played together. And so it was like this. And then it was amazing. It was an amazing experience. It went really well. And then we just kept doing it, little open mics, little, you know, just tiny weird places we would play.
And I think going through that, we also discovered, I mean, it's tense. Like, I think it's like going into business with your partner, right? Like, you're going to open up a shop or whatever, like, it's going to get tense, you know? Like, and it was really hard for us to separate business and like personal.
Yeah.
And like that first performance, I remember so clearly. I was like, I knew Rachel was afraid to sing, and she was like, I'm afraid to sing. and I was like, I didn't know how to take, like, you don't want your partner to be afraid. You don't want to put your partner in a situation where they're uncomfortable. So you're like, I'm like, okay, you know, I'm going to play it my best. And she was like, that's too fast. That's too slow. And we didn't know how to talk to each other. Like we didn't know, like when you're, you know, just business partners with somebody, you're like, look, that's crap. You know, that's absolute shit. And that's not going to serve the purpose. And like, and you can't do that with your partner necessarily, you know, like you have to take care of your partner on two levels. And so like, it took a long time after that first performance. We'd almost like every time we'd play, we'd get into a little fight about like, why, like, cause you know, and like when one person's feeling critical, like, oh, I sucked. The other person wants to lift that person up. Right. But the other person also was like, well,
you did, but what kind of wasn't good?
Yeah,
right.
But
how do we make it better?
Yeah, or like you want
to,
like, oh, come on, like, don't be so negative. Like, it's just this weird roller coaster smorgasbord of emotions. And so, I mean, it took, I'd say, like years of time before we were able to talk to each other and give each other constructive feedback and learn. We're still learning how to like communicate when we're on stage together, right? Like, you know, how to do that faster, do that slower. Like, I can't hear you. And, you know, like these just things that feel like they'd be so simple. And, you know, many bands talk about band dynamic, but when band dynamic and couples relationship dynamic comes into play, it's like, you know, so getting on stage wasn't a problem for us.
Okay.
You know, getting on stage wasn't a problem. It was like how to navigate the space between us on stage.
And when you performed, did you perform originals or did you do covers initially?
Covers initially. And then we had one or two songs that were ours.
You would slip those in?
Yeah. And so I didn't play, you know, a lot of our music is very jazz based. And like in this, I was describing like this pursuit, like how do I, this quest, this for this holy grail, like the song that Rachel would sing of mine. I was trying to, Rachel loves like Fiona Apple, like is a big influence on our music. Ella Fitzgerald is a big influence on our music. And so I was trying to take a couple of songs that like, you know, one of the first covers we did was a blues tune called Rocks in My Bed. And I was trying to just pick out the notes that I felt like Rachel really, like, you know, you can tell there's, like, the moments when Rachel's like, yeah, like, sweet I'm spot. Really, yeah, the sweet spot. And I, like, kind of took, you know, there's a song on the record called Pacific Coast Highway, which is one of the first songs we ever wrote.
Love that. Love it. Yeah.
And there's a little, yeah, a little, like, refrain in there, like, da-da-da-dum, which I sing, which was, like, the beginnings of this melody, but it came about because, like, there are certain, like, chords and just, like, the sweet notes that Rachel would sing, and I tried to, like, just kind of stitch them together and be like, okay, is there a song, if I just stitch all of the notes from the covers that we did that kind of sound good, and, you know, that's kind of how the first songs came about, and there are some songs that lean more towards, like, 60s folk, and there's some songs that lean more towards, like, 40s jazz, but it was really kind of like a buffet of notes and, like, trying to pick the ones that Rachel would most like to consume, you know, like, that was kind of the game in the beginning of writing the first original songs.
Can you talk a little bit about the songs that you have written and that you write and the message that you want to send, if there's, like, a general overall message or, you know, types of themes, and then how you hope your work will impact the world?
We have sort of different, at the moment, I mean, they're a Venn diagram of feeling, but I have sort of a different hope than Tu does, I think. My hope is that people are soothed by our music. That's the main thing that I wish for people, is that it calms them down. They had a bad day at work and they can put this record in. They are driving in LA traffic and they can put this record in, and it will soothe them and calm them down, and they can sing along to it, or they're having a breakup and they can sing a song while they're crying or something like that. So I'm hoping for kind of a more simple response, and that it just brings people some peace and calm.
I don't think it's different. I mean, I do want that. I don't want this music to not suit people. True. Bring people stress or anything like that. But I would hope, I think my hope for our music, because our music is very, I think, pleasant. I think that's safe to say, that it's pleasant. Like, there's a traditional sense of harmony and stuff to it, as opposed to, like, maybe some of the more avant-garde things that you might listen to, and that I really like listening to as well, that I hope that people also see that there's a complexity to it. We put a lot of care, and there's a lot of process. It took 5 years to put this record together. From, you know, the first, like, in 2009, starting to write the first songs, and writing songs throughout that whole process, and really slowly recording as we became able to record, and finding the musicians on this record. It's interesting, like, all of the musicians who played on this record, none of them really got a chance to meet each other.
Or
hear each other's parts.
The piano laid the part down without ever hearing the string part or drums. Like, they all played separate of each other.
Yeah, because we come from the theater community. We didn't have, like, a big network of musicians. So as we would meet people, we'd be like, as we would meet people that we were like, hey, you're really cool, and also you play an instrument? Like, let's see. And we sent them the songs, and we're like, we wanted it to be, maybe Rachel, you can speak more to this, like, we wanted it to be a collaborative effort, because it's been the two of us for so long. Bringing other people in is such a treat.
Yeah, like, the ladies who play string, we have a cello and a violin. They are in a band called Alira Strings, and they play classical, and they play covers of pop songs, but in a string. So they're amazing. But I saw their flyer in a yogurt shop, and it was a really great flyer, so I went home and called them. And they're our great friends now. But they're classically trained musicians, and so for us to write a part for them to play, or these are the notes you should play, didn't feel right. It felt better to say, here's the song, what do you want to do? So most of the, I mean, sometimes there's a loose structure, but most of the parts of the other musicians that you'll hear, they thought of. Because that's not our, those aren't our instruments. So they have a better handle on their own thing than we would.
That's a perfect segue to our next question, because our listeners will know you from the opening of our podcast, of every podcast. And so we know when we approached you, we thought, do we need to be specific about we want, what we want? And Chandra's really the only musically inclined person who, and I was like, I don't know what to tell them. And we were so relieved that you guys were like, we got like all kinds of ideas. So can you talk about the process of creating our jingle?
Yeah. I love this. I love that. I mean, I think the idea that you would, I think it kind of goes back to Rachel's, like the idea that Rachel's said before, like the greatest compliment to us is when people free associate. Like it might not be anything, it's better when it's not anything we've ever thought of, you know, like if we're like, if this sounds like your grandma's cherry pie to you, like, I never would have been able to say that, you know? And, like, that's the magic. That's you bringing yourself and meeting our stuff in the, and meeting in the middle. And so we loved that being the way that this album worked out, was other people would bring their best to the table. We brought our best to the table. And something greater than the sum of its parts came out. And that's kind of how it felt when you guys, you know, approached us and you're like, hey, you want to write a jingle? And, like, I was like, sure, you know? Like, yeah, you guys, I mean, just knowing kind of the basic idea of just mixed truth stories and storytelling and kind of this shaping of, I don't know, I mean, is it, I guess shaping the future is a little bit...
Well, I mean, just to add, what keeps popping in my head, what is so unique about your sound is that it elicits deep memories. That when yours comes on, it sinks itself to something deep within all of us. What that means when it comes out, how you interpret it, is different for each individual. It has a unique experience to that person. But there seems to be a common thread to your sound that just...
It's a narrative.
Yeah, I mean, when I think of your music, I literally will get goosebumps. And it really, it takes me to a really positive, deep place that just feels so human.
Yeah. It's a story catalyst. Like, yes, you know, like, yes. Like those things you don't remember, and then you hear the music, and then the story comes like overflowing back. Yeah.
Mm. Oh, so nice. Thank you. Yes,
thank you so much.
Do you want to talk about the jingle?
Yeah, it's like, that's so nice. Thank you. I actually have this kind of song fragment in my mind for years now. This sort of kind of like melody and guitar part. And I know I love the image of trains. It's like one of our favorite songs of all time is this traditional folk song called 500 Miles. And you probably know it. It's, you know, if you miss the train I'm on, you'll know that I'm gone. And it's like, it's just such a, trains, they're just so... They also feel like they elicit such a romantic idea. They can't really stop, and they're just long, and they're huge, and they carry with them like natural resources and stowaways and all these things. So
hopes and dreams.
Yeah. So I feel like, you know, I have this image of a train and a train whistle and this idea of it never stopping and just moving on and just keep traveling, and so that was actually that was an idea in my mind, and it never landed, it never had a home. So I was like, well, you know, I was like, where did, like, I was like, it was elusive. I was like, am I shoehorning something? Trains, mixed root stories, where does it overlap? And I was like, well, I guess it's like change, it's this inevitable change that's gonna come. It's this, I loved that you guys were sharing with us your mission. Which is, am I gonna butcher it?
Mm-hmm. It's a world that benefits otherness.
Yeah, our
world,
vision. Yeah.
A world that benefits from otherness. Yeah. That feels like such a lovely, both ideal, like that we're getting to, but that also it doesn't feel outside of us either. It's both simultaneously outside and inside. So I don't know. So the lyrics sort of came about in that way, where I think it was trying to recognize what's already there, this hearing that there's change that's in the air and it's coming, and you can hear the train and you can feel the train before you see the train. And, you know, as it comes, it's like, it's there. And before you know it, it's there and it's past. So that's
we
kind of...
love it.
That's kind of the idea. Yeah.
Should we make them play some songs?
Yes, but while we're talking about the album, will you just quickly, before you play something, talk about the album cover and how you chose the photo for the album cover?
Yes. So this is a family photo of mine. The little girl, so if you can pull up your albums in front of you.
And if you don't have one, order one right now.
Where do they go?
We're on CD Baby, iTunes, Amazon. We're on Spotify. You can just stream it.
And if you go to thesingerandthesongwriter.com, all of those things will be available there.
So if you're looking at it, the little girl on the right, who's in profile, is my mom. She's in a matching dress with the other little girl under the people, and that's my Aunt Carol, so that's my mom's younger sister. And then the woman who's dressed in, white gloves and a little handbag, you can see, is my grandma on my mom's, obviously my mom's side. And then the man in the foreground with the cigarette is an Uncle Gordon. And this photo was taken by my Uncle Frank in 1961, and it was at a wedding. And my grandma always, when she looks at this, she always says, "Well, I made that dress." I made that dress.
And
it's
lavender.
It's lavender. It's actually lavender. Yeah. And it's in a black and white photo, so you can't quite tell. But you can't really see it, but they're shaking hands in the back, too. She's shaking another gloved hand in the back, which is actually kind of my favorite part. Because it's almost a little fuzzy, too. The photo had a circular quality to it that I really liked. We got, my Uncle Frank is everyone has a family member who's compiling all of the family, family tree. Like, if you're lucky enough to have this one weird uncle, I have one. And he's been pulling everyone's family trees from forever. He has all the information and he has all these amazing photos. And he just sent us a CD of some of the photos, and we were flipping through, and it was a couple years ago, before we even had a record at all. And she said, "Well, that's our album cover," and I was "Okay," and it worked out perfectly that should be it.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Well, and yeah. I love that in so many ways. Everything that you guys have done has been about, yes, this feels like home. This feels like the right thing, and that you're listening to that. And then acting on it. And I see a little heart here, too.
Oh, yeah.
It's
amazing.
Because I'm romantic. Let's face it. This album, we talk about driving, but there's some things you can't do when you're driving that would also be very nice to listen to this album. It's very romantic. It is.
You heard it here, folks. You heard it here.
I'm just saying, it really is... It's just beautiful.
Music to not drug,
but hey, baby.
Oh, you might.
It's a melody mix.
Yeah. You might start off driving. Let me tell you. Really, really.
Will you play a song for us?
Yes.
Sure. I think we'll play Old Fashioned. Because we played this song at the
Mixed Roots Film and Literary Festival.
Mixed Roots Film and Literary Festival.
I see you guys. When I think of you, I see you, the whole... I can visualize you singing it.
We went backstage after that, and Key & Peele was on next.
Yes.
And I'm a crazy fan of them. And he... who was it? Keegan said it?
Yeah, Keegan. Keegan was so kind. He was like, "You guys were awesome.
You guys were awesome." And we were like, I don't even know if we said thank you. I think we just stared at them.
I might have. Yeah.
You said something awkward.
I probably said something weird.
But that's how we were. But when we played the when we played this song, we just chose it. And we didn't have any idea. And then as we were playing it, it was like a really attentive audience, really quiet. And as we were playing it, they would do knowing sort of chuckles during it, and laugh. And then we re-looked at our lyrics, and they were totally different because we had played in front of this audience and they had a completely different read. We didn't pick it for that. And they kind of...
We believed you did.
We never thought of our music as like, you know, mixed culture or mixed identity. Like, I mean, it's inherent because it's us, but it's never our intention. And, you know, we had originally written this song kind of with the idea of like, you know, kind of modern and old and, you know, the idea of people moving in together that aren't married and when is the time to settle down and those kinds of things, really, you know, kind of universal young ideas. And so then when we played it for this audience, it was like, oh my gosh, it works in many ways. So, yeah.
Knocking at my door, don't want a Romeo, make me wanna wherefore. Want you to love me, honey, and move in with me. Save up a little money, find ourselves a place by the sea, the sea, the sea, the sea, the sea. I ain't got the time.
Share that gift with the world. I can't take it. And I'll be honest, I was like, oh, okay, we gonna see, because she gonna do it live. They are damn good on that album, but we about to see, but you're just sitting in a living room.
And this is just audio. Your feet do the same thing they did when you were standing performing. And that's the part that I remember, like, vividly.
he cannot help it. Even during private rehearsals,
you can't help the feet going.
Yeah, we're weird on stage. His eyes stand stick straight and two just...
It's perfect.
It's so perfect.
It really is.
Should we play the jingle?
We could take you out on the jingle.
Yes, take us out on the jingle.
Charting them for her, or are you picking out the notes you want her to sing, or does you just give her the words and you play the music and she figures it out? How does that process work? Because I know there's different ways of going about it, and I'm a person where give me the notes and I'll follow the notes and then I'll play once I'm comfortable, and I'm not as good as coming up with maybe the how it flows on my own.
So the main, I think the baseline of what you need to know about our process is I don't read music at all.
That's good to know.
I mean, I can, like in church, I can follow that we're going up now and that we're going down.
Okay.
And I sang in choirs when I was growing up, but I don't read music at all. So that's not how we do a song. What I'll just do a brief, like from my end, what occurs, and then maybe you can say from your process. I usually put in a request for a song, like, two, I would like a song about this, or this, I want the tone, I want a song that brings up this, or make it sound like this, or we should have a country song, or we should have a folk song, or here's a paint, one time I was like, here's a painting, write a song about this, that's the song over the town. So, like, I usually put in a request and like a song will pop out, you know, like a like a fax machine.
Right.
A jukebox.
Yeah.
It's a request by email or
is it a form? Yeah. It's a very rote process now.
And then usually a couple weeks later I'll get a song, like a first song, and then I'll say change this, and then
and that's a nerve-wracking moment, because there's like, it feels like an audition. Like, I'm like, oh man, I hope this song.
But what do you mean when you say you get a song? Do you get lyrics?
I get everything.
Okay.
So I get the music and the lyrics.
So I sing it. I perform it for Rachel.
You perform it. And then, so if it's a go, I go, great. And then we have to re-key it into my key.
Yeah.
And then he'll type up the lyrics, record himself singing it, and then I'll learn it. So we have more of like a, like an ancient call and response of how we write songs together.
Yeah.
There's not really a lot of paper. There's no notes. We just
paperless. We went paperless.
It's very environmentally friendly. So
sustainable.
So a lot of songs we learn of, he'll sing it, I'll sing it back. He'll sing it, I'll sing it back. And then after a while, it gets sort of reinterpreted a little bit more, like the phrasing will change from the original. Like, we were listening to original songs of him just the demos of him and how different they are now, which is really amazing.
Really cool. I described once the relationship as sort of like a playwright and a director. You know, feel like I'm the playwright and the words, and there are stage directions, and there's, you know, suggestions of tone and mood and everything. And then when it goes into production, you know, the director puts their own stamp on it and reinterprets certain things, and, you know, but kind of that's kind of the relationship between the singer and the songwriter. It's referring to myself as the third person.
Perfect note to end on. You guys, thank you so much for our jingle and for coming here today and performing with us. And you know, we are thrilled to continue to watch you grow and do whatever we can to support that.
Thank you so much for having
us. It's a pleasure.
It was great.
So glad you got to join us for another MXRS podcast. This podcast was edited by our tireless volunteer, Jonathan Salcedo. Thank you, Jonathan. And as you know, our jingle was created by the singer and the songwriter, and our logo was designed by the talented folks at Zerflin.com. We appreciate your likes on Facebook and invite you to interact with us there. Ask us questions, share your stories. You can follow us on Twitter at @OurMixedStories, and you can send an email to us at info@mixedrootsstories.org. What is your mixed root story? Thank you.